ABC, the television show of the Society for Economic Equality. For the past 7.5 years, we've been bringing you some disgusting stories of the strategies of the globalizing elites and the multinational corporations. Tonight, we bring you a story of treason so shocking, you will rise up in arms against your oppressors. John Walker Lind has been served justice, a 20-year sentence for bearing arms against the United States. And yet, a traitor far more egregious has gone free, unfined, uncriticized by either the government or the media, uninvestigated. We will expose this traitor tonight, a traitor, a U.S. citizen, who for a decade contributed tens of millions of dollars to the Taliban, provided them with weapons, ran public relations for them in the global media. These people have been permitted, this American citizen has permitted to go scot-free. And to prove our claims, we're going to show you a news clip from KCTV LA, dated September 10th, 1998. Can we roll that, please? And then we'll get some comments from our panel. I'm Stephen Durst. We're CTV. Let's run it.
A coalition of activists has taken on a major oil company, and they've called upon a rarely used statute to do it. For the first time this century, community groups are asking the state attorney general's office to revoke a corporation's charter. The target is Unocal. Accusations against the oil giant range from pollution to human rights violations. Alicia Rue has this background report.
The familiar red logo of the Union Oil Company of California has been a part of the country's landscape for years. Since 1890, the company's been one of the most profitable, now competing with such oil giants as Exxon and Mobil for a piece of the global energy pie. But today in Los Angeles, a coalition of citizens groups declared Unocal unfit to do any more business.
We are calling upon State Attorney General Dan Lundgren to comply with California law and to revoke the corporate charter of the Union Oil Company of California for its repeated and grievous offenses.
We are shifting the strategies here from trying to reform or correct the practices of a major oil company to simply shutting it down.
The citizens group, which includes lawyers, environmentalists, feminists, human rights activists, and journalists, offered details of the alleged offenses in a 127-page petition. The charges include damaging the environment and doing business with repressive regimes in Burma and in Afghanistan. A Burmese human rights activist said that an ongoing Unocal-supported pipeline project there used slave labor and forced the displacement of thousands of villagers.
I'd like to ask Unocal, the profit is the only thing that matters to you. You are not helping anyone except army, and it is immoral.
A similar gas pipeline project under consideration by Unocal in Afghanistan also brought about angry responses from the feminist majority group. It says Afghanistan's ruling Taliban regime has stripped all Afghani women of their rights and is treating them inhumanely.
To our knowledge, no other government in the world has so systematically and violently forced half of its population into virtual house arrest. Unocal doing business with the Taliban unavoidably supports this extremist, malicious system of gender apartheid.
Unocal declined to respond to today's protest. Instead, the company urged people to visit their website, where the company defends its human rights record in Burma and in Afghanistan. Unocal says that human rights experts from Bangladesh traveled to Burma in January and concluded that everyone in each village has a better life because of Unocal's work, and that it was a model for other companies. As for the project in Afghanistan, Unocal says it has suspended activities there until further notice. But activists say Unocal is hiding behind half-truths.
It announces after the United States sends missiles to Afghanistan that is suspending its relationships there. But you notice it didn't cancel the relationships.
Duggar admits the coalition may not be able to prove all of its allegations. Nevertheless, he says enough violations have been documented to warrant serious consideration by the Attorney General's office.
The Attorney General must initiate proceedings concerning revocation. He also must do it if the governor tells him to. That puts the governor in the picture.
If neither the Attorney General nor the governor act on the petition, the citizens groups say they could bring a lawsuit to force the courts to take action against UNICAL. For Life and Times Tonight, I'm Alicia Rue.
Very interesting story. It's generated a lot of controversy. There are allegations, and again, I will use the word allegations, human rights violations, major pollution problems, questions about a military dictatorship. Interesting to see what the Attorney General Dan Lundgren does, especially in light of the fact he's in a tough race for governor. The election takes place in November.
Exactly, and it's really tough for UNICAL or any other major company to defend its work practices in foreign countries, especially underdeveloped ones, where they have a long history of going in there and not treating the workers very fairly.
Reminds me a lot about the arguments we heard about South African apartheid in the early 1980s.
Right.
The traitor has been named. The traitor is UNICAL. UNICAL collaborated with the sworn enemies of the United States and provided them with material aid and comfort, and yet they have gone unindicted. Yet they have gone uninvestigated. Yet they have gone uncriticized in the corporate media. How is it that a so-called citizen, as corporations are considered under the rulings of the Supreme Court, can conspire against the people of the United States and escape without so much as a fine, without so much as a slap on the wrist? With me to discuss these questions tonight are Mark Noble Blue Hammond and John, not the Unabomber Fitzpatrick. We're going to discuss these issues much more broadly than just the treason committed by Union Oil of California. We're going to discuss the treason of the multinational corporations in general. We're going to discuss how corporations, by demanding silence when democracy insists upon dissent, by demanding loyalty of their workers when democracy insists upon loyalty of its citizens to the democratic state, is a factory for treason. And the plans for the multinationals to substitute their own form of postmodern feudalism for the People's Republic. John, Blue, you guys want to take over from here?
Sure. You mentioned that the corporations are considered people under the Supreme Court, and that's true, and the title of tonight's program is Downsizing Democracy, Corporations as Persons. It might surprise some viewers to know that legally corporations do have First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Seventh Amendment, 14th Amendment rights. That means they have the freedom to speak or not to speak. They have freedom from search and seizure, freedom to have due process of the law, and they gained these rights before women did, before African Americans did, before most of the people in the United States gained these rights. And personally, I find this a tremendous affront to sovereignty and democracy. I don't think the two are compatible. You have any comments, Blue?
Well, I would think it'd be interesting to point out that corporations are gaining these rights even as persons are losing these rights. And I think the comparison of UNICAL's much more egregious treason compared to John Lynn's, what you might even consider a youthful indiscretion of a confused New Age type young man, where he is so severely penalized, whereas UNICAL is not even criticized, not in the corporate media.
Well, I would say that what we have here is a parallel in the medical profession, too, because, you know, doctors are like citizens that get away with almost anything because they're the medical established order. They can pump these suburban housewives filled with these tranquilizer drugs, get them all glassy-eyed on some afternoon martini, which I found out was the Breakfast of Champions today, yes, if I read it. And a guy that smokes a joint ends up in jail for doing something that grows in Mother Nature. Now, where's the justice there? You're talking about justice here, is what I hear you talking about.
We're trying to.
And it doesn't seem fair. It just ain't fair, is it, to have that happen. But let's look at it from the standpoint of power. When you got that much power, as the doctors have in our society, and you try and go against them, it's the same as trying to go against the corporations, because they got the power, they got the jobs, they got all the good money to spread around and make it happen.
Many doctors are incorporated, enjoying those protections that corporations have, even though they might be the only person in the corporation that limits their liabilities. Well, we're going to see historically that it wasn't always this way, and that a sovereign people once took a much more hard line in controlling their corporations. They set them up with a specific purpose, and they didn't permit them to limit liabilities. And stockholders were forced to face liabilities even after they had sold stock. And we're going to get to that. And we'll also be getting to your phone calls.
I wanted to give credit for that video that we saw, the UNICAL news report. Was from a video provided to me by the National Lawyers Guild. You can visit their webpage on the UNICAL charter revocation action that they've initiated, and that news report was about, at www.heed.net. That's HEED.net. And it's a little bit out of date. I visited there earlier. It's a couple years out of date because obviously the Attorney General shirked his duty, his legal duty, and did not initiate charter revocation against UNICAL in that case. Charter revocation is only one, speaking of power, is only one avenue which people can take to seize back the power that corporations have usurped from them. Charter revocation is an after-the-fact tactic. After the deed, evil deed has been done, you can go and yank a charter. A more proactive stance would be to look at the chartering process itself and to change the nature of charters. And in order to understand how that's done, you really do have to study a little bit of history of what corporations were under the British Empire, under the King, and how the American revolutionaries overthrew the corporate power which the King wielded over them. If you remember, Massachusetts was a corporation, and the Hudson Bay Company was a corporation of the King, and these things were overthrown violently by our forefathers.
And mothers,
yes. So do you think we should go to the next video? Anything else you want to say on that before we go to the next? The main part of the show is the upcoming video. It's a
let's get to the history lesson.
All right. The upcoming video is a woman named Jane Ann Morris. She's with a group called the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy, or POCLAD. They're a very small working group and study group, but they've done a lot of good work traveling around the country, raising consciousness. In the video clip we're about to see, it's hopefully self-explanatory. And when we come back from that video clip, we'll open up the phone calls, the phone lines, and take your phone calls and your comments. So could we see Jane Ann Morris now, please?
Thank you.
Well, a little bit of technical difficulty there, obviously.
Looks like human error.
The chipmunks have invaded the studio, the control room. They're going to rewind the tape, I'm sure, and start it from the beginning.
Well, you know, I think that what we're asking here is, how is it that a person can be free, whether it's a corporation or an individual, and not be under the influence of what might be considered a special interest group? And how is it that we can exist as a society where we think of the rest of society as part of an extension of ourselves without thinking of it as just my group against some other group? Now, here we got corporations, they're thinking of it like it's trench warfare. It's our corporation against the world. And until that changes, I don't see how we're going to move forward on this issue. We got to start fostering some way that people can get past this ideology of separateness and find some kind of common bridge.
Well, that's one approach to it, but I mean, that's analogous to talking people out of being criminals or murderers. And the fact is that there are murderers, and you must put a stop to them, and you write laws and you enforce laws to do that. And
unfortunately, most people still believe that murder is wrong, right? So that by majority rule, we say murderers must be punished.
So the question here is, are corporations people? Now, obviously, corporations will, it's to their advantage to say so. I think that my personal preference for tactic is not to talk them out of their mistaken belief, but to put a stop to their actions by changing the ground rules, the laws.
Or even a stop to their being as such, as immortal. I mean, there are a lot of ways in which corporations are obviously not persons. For one thing, persons are not immortal. But corporations, they just go on and on.
Right. Corporations can be, you know, their own siblings. You can have a corporation that has a child corporation which ends up holding the assets of its parent corporation, so to speak. So it's almost like cloning, the concern of human cloning or whatever. I guess we already have it in a metaphorical sense with these corporations. Are we ready with the video there yet, or?
No, that's it. Well, hey, we're here.
Well, let's talk about the ways in which corporations are not persons. For one, they're not. I mean, they're just not.
They're people.
They consist of people.
Consist of people, special interest people.
A state is not a person either. And that's why
nationalism,
the Bill of Rights is made
people.
To protect the rights of individuals against the state. And there were provisions made to protect the state against corporations, but these have been subverted. The corporations have claimed powers through the insidious use of money and bribery over time, to the point where you don't even get to run for office unless you're deemed somehow safe by the corporations.
Well, I'm thinking that the corporations is a short word for the special interest groups. Would you agree with that?
Certainly, because it's only the very rich who own significant parts of many different corporations.
So
they diversify to protect their special interests.
These special interest groups are in a club.
Right, right.
They get together.
A class,
and they get together and they say, we want to exclude people on the surface of the planet from getting certain rights that we want for ourselves.
Right.
We're going to we're not supposed to trade with Afghanistan, but we need their pipeline to go through there. We're going to do some underground covert operations. Is that what we're talking about?
No.
They're subverting the laws of the United States.
Right.
And getting away with it flagrantly.
Yes.
Not being prosecuted by the...
And rewriting the laws.
Yes,
Having the laws interpreted in their favor, rather than even subverting it, having the courts recognize them as people was not subverting the law. It was just getting the courts to go along with their preferred interpretation.
That does, however, subvert the law.
It subverts sovereignty, our human sovereignty, that's for
sure. Subverts it more like, how would you call it?
Or destroys it.
Captures. Mm-hmm. It captures rights that don't belong to them as entities.
Right. So a worker on corporate property does not have the rights of free speech.
Right.
And does not have the rights of freedom of assembly to get together
right.
with their coworkers and unionize
right.
freely. They must go through all these hoops, and yet the corporation
claims those rights for itself.
Does have it,
and
fact,
by claiming
under
those
the law,
rights, suppresses the rights of the others,
yes.
of real individuals, of real persons. A false person.
So we got to have some group that we can oppress. Is that what you're saying the corporations are doing? We're oppressing the American people right now as a whole because of the power they wield as a special interest group?
Well, not just the American people.
Well, people all over the world?
Yeah.
All people.
Real people.
People that have no
false
organization.
False people are suppressing real people.
And these entities that we call people, also corporations, that have rights as individuals, are somehow oppressing all the other people because they don't have to go up to the same rules of conduct that a person in the society would have to.
Right.
They can be a dictator if they want to, as long as it's within the boundaries of their private property.
Right.
Yeah.
Just as once slave owners were permitted to do, too.
What are we going to do? We're going to go in there and we're going to say this is actually the all people's property now?
Well, we're
just claiming private property? Is that what we're doing?
Not necessarily. I mean, there's a difference between personal property and what's termed private property. I mean, what you have and what you use is your personal property, but private property is like owning a quarter of Costa Rica and you've never even been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. Sort of like the Grapes of Wrath, a million people out of work and one guy that owns a million acres.
I think maybe since we're not going to be able to see that video apparently, I'd like to encapsulate some of what Jane Ann Morris was going to talk about, and a lot of it had to do with the history of corporations. I'd already mentioned that corporations at the time of the American Revolution were chartered by the king, and they were basically extensions of the king's power, the king's sovereignty. And the founding parents of the country, our country, when faced with this idea of power, of who should hold it, did not give it to the states, and they did not give it to the federal, and they did not give it to corporations, definitely, because they viewed the corporations as the enemy. They gave it to the people, and they set up a system of chartering corporations, which was not to be trifled with. Corporations at that time were set up for a specific purpose, like to build a bridge or a highway.
Or a railroad.
Or a railroad.
And
or
they were forbidden to do anything else.
Yes, that's right.
Nothing else.
And we have a phone call?
Yep.
All right. Well, all right. I guess we'll take the phone call now.
Tom?
Good evening.
Hello, Tom.
Hi. Hey, this is a great topic. I was just wondering, some of the points you made earlier about the oil companies, since they seem to be the culprits here, wouldn't it make more sense just to boycott their product, which is gasoline, rather than trying to shut them down by revoking their charters?
I would say no. I think boycotting the product, there are a lot of products out there. You know, when we're done boycotting their gasoline, then we'll have to figure out what else they're moving on to.
You're right.
I think to get to, the doctor, to use the medical analogy, does not sweet talk the cancer. The doctor excises the cancer, and that is what revoking the charter of a corporation is. It's removing the cancer from the body politic.
And you make a good point that the boycott of one product doesn't help destroy a criminal corporation when that corporation is diversified. For instance, Pepsi-Cola owns Kentucky Fried Chicken. Well, I'm boycotting Pepsi, but I don't know how much else they own, and then I'm spending money on their subsidiaries, and it's all a shell game. If you're going to get to the root of the matter, you got to get to the root of the matter. You can't take it one issue at a time. The issue is unaccountable corporate power, and until that power is accountable to the public in a democratic way, there's not much good in pretending like you're boycotting part of them when you don't even know how many other interests they have, which is a point, and I'd like you to get back to that, John. Originally, corporations were forbidden from doing anything but what they were chartered for. If they were chartered to build a dam, that's what they did. And they didn't even have to commit a crime to have their charters revoked. The charters were for 5, 10, 15 years, and the charters were up. At the end of that time, the legislature might decide that they had not done a good job and grant somebody else the charter. But anyway, John, please get back to some of the original rules that corporations had to
Okay. I will, but we do have another call. Another Tom is on the line. Hello, Tom. Your question, comment on corporate personhood and corporate chartering?
You got any gum?
Hey.
Thanks for the call,
Tom. Glad we have the adolescent crowd tonight and captured them.
So what were some of the other original rules that the founding parents made for chartering corporations?
Well, besides having the specific purpose, corporations were forbidden from owning stock in other corporations.
Oh.
So that you always know who is responsible. The idea of limited liability was not involved at all. Right now, corporations, the stock owner, the stockholder is only liable for the value of that stock, not for the damage that the corporation may do in that person's name.
Right.
And back then, there were even cases where people were doubly or even triply liable for the damages that the corporation inflicted during the time when they owned that stock, even after they had sold the stock. So if you own a piece of stock, it was definitely in your interest to know what your corporation was doing, or else you would be held completely liable for all the damages that the corporation may have done. I think that's a tremendous privilege which we grant for almost no reason. There's almost no reason for limited liability in maybe some experimental R&D things. There might be a reason, high risk, that wouldn't get done if there were not limited liability. But that right now, every corporation is a limited liability corporation, except for if it's nonprofit.
I like how the new Homeland Security Act protects corporations from liability. For instance, drug corporations for vaccines that might cause aneurysms or whatever.
Yeah.
This is beautiful.
What are some other ideas that were involved in chartering? You mentioned that they were only for a limited amount of time, that they could be... the papers and effects of the corporation were open to the legislature or committees of the citizenry for examination at any time. And sworn testimony could be compelled of the board and chair persons of the corporation at any time, because it is in the people's interest as the sovereigns of this country to know what this subordinate entity which we've created is doing in our name.
After the Civil War and the fabulous profits that corporations made off that war, Lincoln warned the people that the corporate power was about to take over just weeks before he was assassinated. And it was not long after that the Supreme Court said, well, they're persons, and they have Fourth Amendment rights, so you can't look at their papers. You can't go in there and say, well, we want to look at your books.
Right, so how...
Hey, we got a caller here that's been waiting. Rick.
Okay.
We got a couple callers.
Oh, we got a couple callers. Wow, that's fantastic. Rick's on the line. Your question or comment on corporate personhood, huh? Hello, Rick.
Hello?
Hello, Rick.
Rick, yes, we can't hear you. Speak up, dude.
Yes, come.
Go ahead.
Move on to Fred.
Rick is off the line. Okay, we're moving on to Fred. Hello, Fred. Your question or comment on corporate chartering or corporate personhood?
Oh, this is Rick.
Oh, hello, right. Hi, Rick.
Okay, Rick. Hi.
I just wanted to comment on the corporate form of business. As you probably know, there's three ways a business can operate: as a sole proprietorship, a partnership, or a corporation. And I believe that the corporation, as John said, when a corporation is formed, of course, the biggest advantage to it is that there's no personal liability for the stockholders. On the other hand, there is, I believe, double taxation on profits or dividends. If a corporation is making a lot of money, the corporation is not only taxed, but the individual who owns the stock is too. So that's the disadvantage. The advantage, of course, is to not have the personal liability for any lawsuits. And as far as the searches of their papers and so forth, a corporation, I don't believe, is totally immune to that any more than a real human being would be if there's some type of probable cause and a warrant is issued. Now, correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I guess my main point is that if you got rid of corporations entirely, I believe the real problem is capitalism, and if the capitalists are going to operate as sole proprietorships or as partnerships, isn't that still going to be a problem?
Well, we're talking about democratic control of corporations, and while you make a good point about taxation, the loophole system is such that most major corporations pay no taxes at all.
Correct.
On huge profits.
I'm not justifying, I'm just saying in theory that's what it is.
Right, in theory, but in the real world, this is not the case. Also, with the search and seizure thing, you know, you're more likely to have the ATF break down your door as such without a warrant than if you're a corporation, you're going to get a warrant served against you to go in and look at those papers. So
okay.
In the real world, again, the real power has come to the point where the state and the corporations are together like this. And as Mussolini defined it, fascism is a partnership between the state and corporations.
What's your take on the Unocal idea there that we showed, Rick?
Well, I guess I wouldn't just single out one type of corporation. I know that during the 1960s, for instance, the Dow Chemical Company came under a lot of fire because they were producing napalm, which was being used in a horrendous way in Vietnam to maim and kill people. I think the real problem, as I said, is that as long as you have a capitalist system, and I believe capitalism exists in every country in the world, I think alternative forms of an economic system are simply theories that have never been tried. But I think it's almost irrelevant to me whether a company is a corporation or a single proprietorship or a partnership. For instance, you could have an individual who incorporates, and as one of the panelists said, if the corporation might consist of one person. So a corporation is not necessarily a big thing. It's simply a way of doing business. And you could have a sole proprietorship or a partnership that's committing very many evil acts. I think the democratic control of corporations is almost an oxymoron, because I firmly believe that a socialistic type of arrangement would be the only one where you could have democratic control. I don't know how you're going to have democratic, you know, the term democratic capitalism is used, but I don't really know how that can work, because the bottom line for any capitalist outfit is to make profits, and if anybody gets hurt in the process, that's just too bad. I mean, and that's accepted by, it seems, almost all strata of our society. You know, people seem to think that business is a good thing. I mean, private business, even big business. People are afraid of big labor. They're afraid of big government. They're afraid of the big media. but they don't seem to be too afraid of big business. I'm talking about the average person, though.
Yes, yeah. Well, in general, I do agree with you, at least as your critique of capitalism, I certainly do.
Before we let Rick go, can I ask him how he feels about the difference between John Walker Lynn and Unocal? Why is one punished and the other not? The one was far more treasonous?
Probably because there is a picture on the media of this rather scraggly-looking character, and he's thought of as a traitor, whereas a corporation is pretty faceless. You know, I mean, if you have a corporation, by its very nature, the responsibility is diffused, and if you're looking at an evil corporation, well, who is the evil person or person, you know, because in a sense, all of us could own stock in a corporation, and if one of us owned stock in Unocal, it wouldn't necessarily make us evil, and it would make a whole lot of people. It's hard to really pin on it. For that reason, maybe that is maybe that alone makes it evil, because the responsibility is diffused. It's like everybody's responsible, so nobody's responsible. But I personally think John Walker Lynn and Unocal are both evil, in my opinion.
What about the people that actually went to Afghanistan and influenced the pipeline through Afghanistan, even though it was against the law to do so? Couldn't those people be singled out and tried?
If you can point to a particular statute which they were violating, I guess a law, I think it's immoral, but a lot of things are immoral but not illegal, and vice versa. I don't know. If you're going to have a situation where capitalists all over the world want to, and I think many countries want to build a pipeline to Afghanistan because it will increase the oil profits, I think that we see right now in this work up to the war in Iraq that one of the things that's been discussed is that France and Russia went along with this because they were assured by the United States that if Saddam Hussein were thrown out, that Russia and France would get their cut. I mean, there's really no morality involved here, and when you're talking about governments or business, it's all about...
Well, that's why we need democratic control, because...
We need democratic socialism, I feel, but I guess maybe you guys have a slightly different perspective. It sounds like you think capitalism can be refined or made a little nicer. I guess I just don't believe that.
Well, I'm saying that under the original laws of this country, legislatures could revoke charters because the charters were based on the corporation fulfilling a public good. The corporation didn't even have to commit a crime to have its charter revoked, but if it failed to fulfill its function and its purpose that it was chartered for, which was ultimately to serve the public good, then it would cease to exist.
Can that still
basically
be done?
A death penalty for corporations.
Well, Rick,
is that still in effect?
Well, yeah, the laws are still on the books, but the federal courts have basically said, oh, no, a corporation is a person, and you can't just axe them.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Rick. We do have another caller on the line, and we'd like to get to him. That was Rick, and now we're going to Frank. Hello, Frank.
Hello.
Hi, do you have a question or comment on this idea of corporate personhood and corporate chartering process?
Well, what interests me is your concentration on corporations, because the evil of the capitalist system includes not just corporations, but any capitalist enterprise, because really they're based on the robbery of workers. And so if we're talking about a small company or a large corporation, they make their profits by squeezing it out of the poor devils that do the work for them.
Yeah, that's true.
The good old wage slaves. And,
yeah.
You know, and another thing that interests me is that actually Ford Motor Company is a perfect example of what I have in mind. Ford Motor Company in 1940 had the biggest company at River Rouge, the biggest industrial complex at River Rouge that ever existed in the world. And it was a sole proprietorship, or at least it certainly wasn't a corporation. They were shooting down strikers. They were shooting down people who marched on them. They did all kinds of crimes, and these are the same people that built that Pinto, you remember, that killed all these people. The little car that blew up, a traveling kind of a landmine sort of thing.
Yeah.
And really, what you really ought to consider is whether not just corporations should become persons, but whether the whole capitalist system should be abolished.
Well, as you know, Frank,
and
we've done that many times on this show.
All those oppressions that you talk about can take place under private.
All right, then let's agree that the inequality of wealth creates unaccountable power, where those without wealth are helpless and hopeless in the face of those who have wealth and can control the courts and can control the legislatures. But we're trying to look at a particular aspect of the type of treason against our own country that is done by globalizing elites and multinational corporations, who are by far right now the most powerful entities in the world because they control the military industrial complex of the superpower in which we find ourselves foundering, I'm afraid.
Frank, my interest in this is not so much that it's the end-all and be-all of the solution to whatever capitalist problem that is, or whatever the problem is which you identify as capitalism. It's rather to raise people's consciousness that there is an assault on their sovereignty that is occurring continuously, and this assault is in the form of a corporate form. It's without changing our economic system, working within the legal framework which we now have, we can put an end to this assault on our sovereignty. And the process of doing so will raise people's consciousness and teach them about capitalism. I guess, I know we've talked in real space a lot of times, and we disagree on the path to get, we don't disagree on the end point, but I think we do disagree on the path to get there. I think it's a matter of raising consciousness by any means necessary, and not some sort of socialist party or communist group think ideology, but rather it's working out solutions in real time, in real space, facing real problems.
Get a word in it.
Sure.
Wait, Frank, you talked. I haven't said anything yet. I'm wondering whether the question really comes down to not the approach, but what it is that we're after. And that seems to be where we agree, in that we all want some form of independent freedom for each individual to exercise their lives to the fullest so that they're capable of making informed decisions. Now, whether we're under a capitalist system, communist system, or a socialist system doesn't seem to be the point to me. It seems to be that the individuals that make up these systems have to come back to Earth and realize they're part of this whole planet and get out of this special interest group consciousness and start looking at the whole planet as a special interest group. Until we do that, and I guess that's similar to your revolution, we're going to end up with a special interest group type system regardless of what it is, whatever ism we happen to be under.
Well, you know, one thing is, it seems to me you haven't really explained what you had in mind as a method of getting the corporations to do what? Commit suicide?
A reassertion.
Hold on.
I'm sorry, Frank. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me go on. It seems to me you take the idea that this is a democracy much too seriously. You know, this is if this is a democracy, heaven help us. It's probably the most corrupt political system that ever existed in terms of actual dollars involved. The most corrupt political system that ever existed. Do you really think you can go to court and get the courts to put an end to the sovereignty of corporations? Who are you going to elect to do that?
Let me read something to you, Frank, okay?
Those judges have all been paid off, buddy, every one of them.
Let me read something to you. This is a quote from a, and this is a little bit longer. I actually have two different quotes here that come from our court system, which don't prove you wrong, but are at least countervailing to your cynicism about the courts. One comes from New York.
Realism.
Or realism, cynicism, realism, I understand that. One comes from New York State in 1890. The state revoked the charter of the North River Sugar Refining Corporation. The New York State of Appeals, that was of course appealed at the charter revocation, and the appeals court upheld the decision. And
someone hadn't been paid off.
It was a unanimous decision of all seven justices, and one line from their decision, it resonates strongly with me. The judgment sought against this defendant is one of corporate death. The life of a corporation is indeed less than that of the humblest citizen. Now that shows a belief in democratic sovereignty, which can, in fact, overcome the usurpation that corporations are attempting to perpetrate on us. More recently, in Nebraska, in 1982, by initiative process, they added a constitutional amendment which bans all corporations and syndicates from owning farmland and livestock in Nebraska. That's in their constitution. That, of course, was appealed. And in 1986, the Nebraska Supreme Court ruled that as long as the different treatment for certain corporations was rationally related to a legitimate state interest, it would not violate equal protection. And then they wrote also another quote, which I'll read because it's inspiring. The ultimate source of power in any democratic form of government is the people. Our Nebraska Constitution is a document belonging to the people. Subject only to the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution, the people may put in their document what they will. Even to the shock and dismay of constitutional theoreticians, the people may add provisions dealing with non-fundamental rights, as well as provisions bearing the most tenuous of relationships to the notion of what constitutes the basic framework of government. The people may add provisions which legal scholars may decry as legislative or statutory in nature, but the people may do it nonetheless. Now that is a Supreme Court in a state in this supposedly non-democratic country. It shows at least that...
These sweet words anyhow, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's upholding a constitutional amendment which bans corporate farming in Nebraska. I didn't even know that, and that's been on the books for 2 decades now there. We do have another caller on the line here, been waiting for a while, so thanks, Frank, for your call and your challenge to us. We do appreciate it. And now we're going to Hans on the line. Hans?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time getting it. I thought Johnny Walker was a drink.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, right. I guess I'm 20 years in prison for Johnny Walker. I thought the Taliban had outlawed alcohol.
It did seem like the main emphasis that all of us are talking about is the people, right? And whether it be the corporate people or the so-called democratic people.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised to see that Al Gore won the presidency by 500,000 votes, and yet he's not in power. And why is that? Because we don't have a democracy. We have a republic here that's based on a balance of powers between what's practical, the power brokers, and what's idealistic, democracy. So this is what we're dealing with here. These people are entrenched in power positions, and the only way I think that we're ever going to get through it is to change the actual mentality of the people that have the power. Why are they going to voluntarily give it up? And if we go into some sort of conflict, we always end up in ideological struggles. So we got to have an actual quantum leap in awareness for the people that are in power already to realize that they're killing themselves. Sort of like the nuclear rays. We've gone to such a point that we can't even use the weapons because we end up killing ourselves with all the radioactive fallout that comes out.
Unless you're really stupid like Bush.
Unless you're really
Bush
stupid.
Bush is saying, well, we can use nuclear weapons.
And since we're faced with these extremely stupid people, I just don't think talking them down is the right way to do it. You know, sometimes
well,
it's time to move in.
We've got to confront them with our sovereignty.
We'll just
That's
replace
right.
them with our own brand of prejudice. We got to reach a point where we don't have these prejudices.
Well, now who's being unrealistic? I mean, everyone's always going to have prejudices because our ideas are based on our experiences, and there will always be conflicts between peoples and groups. The beauty of the idea of democracy is that politics can mediate these things, and that We can still agree on certain things while disagreeing on others. We can still get business done without making some people so destitute and helpless and hopeless that they have no chance, and other people so powerful that they're unaccountable no matter what they do.
Hey, I've always thought free beer on Friday was a good idea.
Yeah,
but
that's a great
the
idea.
Problem with that is it's an ideal. And same with democracy, it's an ideal.
You know, right. Well, you can't just, you don't have democracy and then that's it. You have democracy as an idea, and then you have to keep redefining it, and it means actually exerting energies. People have to exert energy. It's democracy is like the brain. You use it or you lose it.
Well, it could be that we don't have prejudice if we have the ability to look through the compassionate eyes of someone who's without prejudice. Now, I'm not sure who that may be, but I think that that's where we're headed. We're eventually going to get to a point where we don't see the past as necessarily being the only way that we're ever going to get through the present. We can actually live in the present with new technologies that don't involve the past always dragging along behind all that horrible baggage that seems to come with it.
How about let he without prejudice or a past cast the first vote? That's why I've always thought children should be allowed to vote.
That's right. They're the ones that are going to save us, if anybody is, because they haven't got the prejudices yet. Right? They're still unprejudiced. They're still fresh and able to see things in a new way.
That's just your prejudice.
Yeah, well, they still, children, from my experience, will still grab what isn't theirs, all right? That's, people do that, whether they're adults or not.
They'll do that when they see people do it. It's sort of like the monkeys on Bali. The monkeys on Bali were all like monkey-like and having fun. Then the tourists got there and they saw how the tourists acted, and the monkeys started acting like the tourists, stealing cameras and pulling people's hair. And
See,
got a total social breakdown because they were influenced by the influx of Western tourists.
If we were to raise children in an environment where they didn't have so much emphasis on private property, but had an emphasis on the public good for all people,
right,
then they might end up with children that aren't quite so me oriented.
Right.
And that's where we got to keep working. We got to keep working with the fresh new minds, the ones that are going to actually change the world in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep reinforcing to them that it's the love vibe, all that kind of stuff that's important, not just how much money you got in the bank or how high you are on the corporate ladder. See, those are all false values. Those are all, in the end, they don't mean much. What means something is how much character you have, how much individual freedom you have, how well you feel when you get up in the morning, those kind of things. Mental health, spiritual health, all that sort of stuff.
Well, I can't disagree with what you're saying, but it's not focused enough to take action on. I mean, that's not anything that people can, talk about and rally around and action around.
It is. It's the whole change of heart thing. But we're trying to give people
right,
a
it's
history
a personal
lesson
thing.
And remind
it's
them of where power comes from.
Right, in a democracy, people work together. They don't back off into a love fest, a personal mind trip of democracy is about, like what you were saying, mediating disputes and coming together in group decision making to,
it's
two minds are better than one at sometimes.
The
too,
things
you
that
know.
We can agree upon,
yeah.
For instance, is rock solid, murder is wrong, child abuse is wrong, silencing people for their beliefs is wrong. We got to stick to these things and then work on the other issues as we can. I'm not willing to give up free speech for any kind of revolution, because if you throw away the rights you had in the past for security or whatever you want or equality or whatever your ideal is, you're not going to gain anything. You're just going to lose what people fought for so many centuries. We've got to remember our history, and there's no bigger problem to me in America than our lack of historical perspective, both on how we got here and why the people before us fought for the rights that we have. People now, they think they've somehow been taught that they were given these rights. Oh, someone came along and gave us these rights. Well, that's not how it happened. The rights we have we had to fight for, and we have to keep fighting for them, and we have to keep redefining them, and we have to keep asserting them, or they're gone. Because there's always someone who's going to want to take your rights away.
It's funny, you know, I hear you talk about wanting to fight for all these things, and you got to fight for this right.
You do, yes.
Fight for that right.
It's a struggle for existence.
And I think that it's, if that's all it ever is, it's just a struggle, constant struggle, then how will we ever see a point where we're not at each other's throats? Like right now I see these sort of radical people that want to shut down the WTO, and I see the people that are in power that want to keep it going because it feathers their nest. It seems like we got to reevaluate what it is that we're fighting for. If we're fighting for just individual freedom, then I suppose that's all right. But when we're fighting for some nebulous idea, such as being part of the country club or being part of some radical subgroup, then I don't think we're looking at it broad enough. We got to spread our ideas so that we incorporate all of the people, not just our particular ones that support our view.
To me, that's what democracy is. You know, it's not
an ideal.
It's not just a country club of the privileged, and it's not just an isolated individual pursuing that person's individual interest. It's everybody involved in group decision making, and you know that's the whole focus of tonight's program was about, is why corporations are a threat to democracy, and which is more important, democracy or corporations?
Take a look at Mr. Burns in The Simpsons. How gnarled and repressed he is, and how he's it's like nobody's given him a hug in his whole life. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to do: get some of these guys out of these ivory towers and get in down and give them, everybody give each other a hug.
How are we doing on time there? I want to
emphasize that there's no political democracy without economic democracy, and that's where corporations are the threat. Because they like subvert political democracy by achieving economic superiority.
I wanted to give out some references to people, viewers, so they can educate themselves. I've already mentioned the National Lawyers Guild, which is at heed.net, and the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. This is at poclad.org, POCLAD.org. That is a fantastic website. The Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDF.org. They focus on factory farms and charter revocations. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILPF.org. They have a large page with PDFs and a 10-session study group packet that you can download. If anybody wants to get together with me and set up a study group based on that, I would love to join you to do that. The Green Party has talked about corporate personhood before. You can visit their website. A neat place that's fun and kind of youthful is called Big Medicine, which is at nancho.net, N-A-N-C-H-O.net. They have radio programs, a lot of information. You can learn about mimetics there. It's a fun website. And, I guess we're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
What do I think about GRTV? Well, it's an opportunity for poor people like me to air their views, opinions, and bitches on television. You don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have to have sponsors. You don't even have to have any common sense. You can just put your ugly face on TV and say and do what you want, as long as it's within the social guidelines of decency. Obscenity laws, I don't agree with them, but you must abide by them. There's certain rules that we live by, and GRTV does not stand alone in its governing policies. So you come down, it's pretty liberal, you can do what you want, you can have a good time, and every time I've been here, it's been educational. So what do I think about GRTV? I like it. It makes me feel like I'm somebody. How's that?